It is freezing, but we're here. Welcome to Tech Plus, our weekly tech show where we talk about all the biggest tech stories. My name is still Ion, and that guy over there is still Kane. Hello, Kane.
Hello. It's funny because you pointed me like they could see me.
I know. I sometimes forget we don't have viewers. We've got listeners.
To your left, yeah, you could hear me.
Yeah. So how's it going, Kane? How was your week?
A new week of tech. It is getting cold, but there's like a part of me that starts feeling like the sun's coming up a little bit earlier.
I've noticed since you mentioned it last week, I actually noticed it, yeah.
Yes. Mm. Specifically going down a bit later as well. I feel like towards the end of the evening, you get a little bit of extra sunlight. That's always appreciated.
Yeah, but that bite is still in the air, hey?
It's chilly, eh? Especially at night.
Close by, I don't know.
Yeah. How are you running heaters? How are you staying warm?
Yeah, heaters and extra layers and blankets.
Do you have an electric heater, gas heater? Do you open your oven?
I do all of those.
Someone told me the other day they opened their oven to warm the house up.
Yeah, well, after I use the oven, I leave it open, and it kind of helps, you know, but it cools down so quickly, it just shows you how cold it is.
Yeah.
And obviously, I live close by water, the lagoon, so it's extra freezing.
You get that nice icy breeze.
Oof, it is freezing, I'm telling you. But I actually use a blow heater, you know. It's basically like a glorified
big hair dryer.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's because obviously you got the fan and then it blows through the element, but man, that thing chews electricity, eh?
You know, the problem for me with a heater, especially something like that, is the minute you use the heater to warm up, like if it's warming up your legs or maybe it's next to you, the minute you leave that heater, you are better off without it. You know, if you're actually not going to be sitting next to it anymore, it kind of bites you extra hard when you warm that little part of your body up and then move away from the heater, then it's like icy.
And ESCOM miraculously still hanging in there. I think this week marked 120 days of no load shedding, and I think it's just surreal.
It is. It's absolutely like you know, it's uncommon. It's almost weird that we have so much power. It's like,
yeah,
uncommon. But that being said, I've seen some stuff floating around. Someone, I think, in Cape Town was super upset because they spent R1,000 and they only got like 250 rands worth of units. They had like a 750 rand service charge on like that purchase.
I had a similar thing recently, and you know, it's sickening. You feel robbed when it happens to you. You're like, damn, is this even legal?
But I feel like it plays on your mind because at the beginning of the month when you buy, it feels so lucrative. It's like you're getting so much for so little. And then at the end of the month, you're just like you're barely getting anything
those
out
charges,
of it.
Those charges, eh? Yeah, like you hoi 200 rand and you get like 10 rand to use it. Because all of it's going for the charges. And you feel robbed, eh? It's a very bad feeling. I was in a bad mood when it happened to me.
You have like 2 kilowatts left.
I was like, bitter. Screw all of this, you know.
I've once had that where I bought an electricity token. I spent like 300, 400 rand. And I think I had like 2.4 kilowatts or something like that. Units. So I was like, what?
Yeah, no, I won't even last an hour with that. But listen, from electricity to Ubers, you use Uber quite frequently. Are you still happy? How's your experience?
I'm very happy with Uber. Actually, I feel a bit bad for the drivers in Nasna area because
now you're going to feel even worse because this week, Uber said to, obviously, it's got the main company overseas, and it said to South Africa's, you know, Uber drivers that your cars now have to be newer than 3 years. It's the strictest age limit in the world. Uber will now require drivers to use vehicles that are newer than 3 years when operating on the platform. Now, first of all, from a rider's perspective, like you, also a rider, Kane, it's nice because now, oh, cool, I'm going to be in the new car, you know, and it's not going to be like a skedonk that's going to break down and the door's going to fall off or whatever. So it's safer, and you also know that it's probably a good driver as well if they can afford a car that's been manufactured in the past 3 years.
You know why I think they did that?
Uh-huh.
I think they did that because if I think about it the other way around, South Africa, I think, is one of the countries, especially because it's a third world country, it's probably one of the more common countries to have cars that are generally older on the road than, you know, Europe. You go to Europe, everything is kind of new on the road. But here in South Africa, you can have a Toyota Taz from 1992.
Those are legends,
You know, you can have Ford Escorts, 1990, and, like, you get the even a beetle, you can still get
it. It's still beetles.
A beetle, not a new shape beetle, the old beetle.
Yeah. You know, I love those.
The beetle that it, beetle that it's if you so crash cute. Into it, you break down.
And the engine is in the back. That's so funny.
I know. It's like, and in South Africa, I think obviously because older cars are more predominant. If you had to think, let's say Uber said you're allowed to have a car up to 10 years old. How do they make sure a car between 5 years old and 10 years old is actually capable of being on the road with confidence?
Yeah, good point.
Because roadworthies can be faked. Documentation can obviously be forged. Shucks, people can make mistakes, you know. An older car is obviously more of a risk. So from my point of view, I think that Uber has done this reasoning, which is if the car was manufactured and sold to the first owner 3 years ago, the likelihood that it has something wrong with it that is significantly unsafe is very low. Therefore, they don't have to super scrutinize roadworthy certifications, and they don't have to, you know, do all of that heavy due diligence.
Yeah, because good point.
Even if you share your service history with someone, first of all, it can be faked. Second of all, you don't actually, from an Uber perspective, this guy out of India who's hired to review your documents, which it will legitimately be the process that's involved, he now has to make a call whether your car is good enough to pass the minimum requirements to drive on a road, but without being able to inspect the car physically, maybe not being a mechanic or an engineer himself, or even being able to deduce whether a document out of somewhere like Nigeria is legitimately with a local mechanic or not. And the small town, like Uber drivers will use mechanics that are local and small. Must be so difficult to manage older cars.
So that kind of makes it easier for them. But what about the drivers, you know?
Total failure.
Like now you've got you've got a car that's 7 or 10 years old. Now you can't be an Uber driver anymore.
It makes a big problem for a potential business owner, because you could buy a car that's 2 years old. You have 1 year that you can actually make money with it. Even so, buy a car that's 1 year old, you have 2 years to make money with it. Buy a car that's
brand new,
you have 3 years to make money on it. And you better make money on it if you're buying it to make money on it. Because when that 3 years is over, you essentially got to sell the car. Which is good for our second-hand car economy, because it means all the Uber drivers that rack up 150, 200, 300,000 Ks on the clock in 3 years are going to sell those cars for super cheap, or at least a good price, because they're going to be quite common. And, you know, three-year-plus old cars will be more predominant in our market, in the second-hand market, I think.
But what about Simpiwe, who's driving his 2001 Honda? What about him now? Now he doesn't have a job.
I think the majority, at least a large portion of Uber drivers who are currently trying to get their own car, because I think probably 60% of Uber drivers don't even have their own car.
I think they rent
the car.
So
I don't know how much of a difference it'll be on availability of cars to rent, but the problem still pertains, which is the fact that renting this car per week is such a high rate.
I don't know how they make money.
Especially it being so new. You know, 1.2 million rand car, Uber XXL, you know, Uber Black. It's gonna be huge money, large rent.
Makes it really difficult to lease.
Makes it hard for them to get financing. They might be able to get financing for a 5-year-old car, but not a 1-year-old car.
But they're already battling to make money. So how are they making money now, you know?
Yeah.
This is very worrying for
it's
Uber
tough
people.
And it's something that we wanted to actually speak about for Ubers in Nasna, because in larger towns the Uber economy is actually quite ripe. It makes a lot of sense. You need to go somewhere, you book an Uber. There's probably an Uber near you. And wherever you're going, there's probably someone else who wants to go somewhere from where you're arriving.
Yeah.
But in Uberland, in smaller towns, that Uber driver might be the last Uber driver there that night. So let's say you're out on a Saturday night, there's one Uber driver left, and he's done a pickup from town and he's dropped off in Pazula. And you might still be home. You might want to come out to the club, right? So let's say it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and you're in Brenton. And this Uber driver's just dropped someone back home in Pazula. When he books that Uber, when you book that Uber for that Uber to come fetch you, the price is calculated from you going from Brenton to wherever you're going, let's say Nasa Central. So the price that the Uber's making is going from Brenton to Nasa Central. The price that's not being calculated is the Uber driver driving from Pazula to Brenton. It's fine if it's an Uber XL because you might make $120. But when it's an Uber Go from Brenton to town, which might be like $55-$40, can you imagine I told you I'll pay you 40 Rand to come from Pazula to Brenton to take me to town?
No.
Let's make it even
That's
worse.
That's not right. They should fix that.
Let's make it even worse. Let's say instead of me going to Nyasa Central, I have to go to Buffalo Bay.
So now
the Uber driver in Pazula has to drive to me in Brenton, drive me to Buffalo Bay, and then he might get another pickup in Pazula. And he's got to drive all the way to Pazula before he makes any money. So if Uber can work on a small town economy to help drivers incentivize, to help incentivize drivers for that, that's going to be very beneficial. Because let's be honest, if it really is 11 o'clock at night and there's one Uber left and he's in Brenton and you need to get from town back to your house, you're going to pay as much money as is needed to incentivize that guy to come pick you up. Because alternative is you don't go home.
Yeah, you'll have to show the money because otherwise it's not going to work. But I mean, in terms of Uber availability here in our small town, I think it's not too bad. I mean, like checking now, the nearest Uber is, it's an Uber Go, it's 6 minutes away, and it says fares are slightly higher due to increased demand, like 41 Rand from here to the waterfront. It's not bad.
I think it's just the economy is very difficult to manage, because if the drivers aren't getting properly incentivized, it makes it very difficult for them to be around long term.
Oops, I almost booked the trip.
Your Uber has arrived.
Okay, we're going to the waterfront.
You might be adding to the problem of people booking and cancelling.
Whoops. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, these Uber drivers are here, and sometimes they'll sit for half the day before they get their first trip. But when you book, they're still available. So you might not know it when you see that Uber Go ride and it says fastest, but actually if you pick Uber X or Uber XL, you're probably going to get the same driver, because the Uber XL driver will still see your Uber Go ride request, and he can choose whether to accept that or not. So as an Uber XL, he obviously has to make more money because his car uses more fuel, but he's going to have to accept your Uber Go request because that's the only ride that's available. So it does make it incredibly difficult to manage that economy between rider and driver. And to make matters even worse, Uber recently returned their commission to the previous normal. So I think when they were launching in Nyasa, they reduced their commission from the drivers to help better incentivize them to get active in the area. And they've recently taken that commission back. So now they're making 15% less on not getting paid to arrive at the destination.
Now
it starts getting unsustainable, and now we have a problem. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. And Nyasa is just a small example of a small town problem. What about Klet? What about Wilderness? What about other places around the world? Are these micro cities that are growing and will eventually become a larger city? How does Uber get in there? How do they make it worthwhile for those drivers? And to make matters worse, if you're an Uber XL driver and you get an Uber Go request and you decline it, if you decline it too many times, you're going to get penalized.
I believe so, yeah.
So that's even more difficult now.
Oh, shame, man. Yeah, so they're really navigating difficult waters right
now.
Yes,
so...
Remember
to tip your drivers. Yeah. Moral of the story, might help.
But also, in more e-hailing news this week, in a bid to crack down on the criminal activity on the Bolt app, that, of course, is Uber's competition, the company said on Thursday it was introducing new features aimed at improving driver and rider safety. So Bolt said clients would now be required to take a clear selfie before requesting a ride, and that an identification document of the rider may be required to be submitted on the app.
Makes, of the rider, that's interesting.
Yes, and what if you don't like selfies? Anyway, drivers on the platform have long complained about being robbed by clients who usually order rides and then they rob the drivers of their earnings, cell phones, and sometimes even their cars.
Whoa.
Life in South Africa for
Jeepers. Speaking of life in South Africa, DSTV. DSTV. We need a new acronym for that, like Don't Stop TV or something like that, because really they are fighting tooth and nail to keep themselves in this market.
Do not stop, yeah.
But maybe not quite in the best way possible. Do you remember when Netflix had their password crackdown?
Oh, I'll never forget it.
Now, what were they trying to do? They were trying to stop people from simultaneously streaming content from the same account. So if you were in house one and I was in house two and we both had the same password and login information to the same Netflix account, we wouldn't necessarily be able to both stream to each household without paying a little bit extra.
Yeah, they wanted to make extra money. Yeah.
So the continued decline of DStv Premium customers over the past 2 years suggests the broadcast decision to slash its simultaneous streaming limit to one device did not help boost subscriptions. So when DStv saw Netflix kind of coming up with this password sharing crackdown, they schemed, hey, let's also crack down on this password sharing. In fact, there are indications that the move potentially accelerated annual premium subscriber drops. After years of allowing up to two simultaneous streams on a package, DStv announced an abrupt reduction to one concurrent stream in March 2022. The move infuriated many customers who quickly pointed out that if they would no longer be able to watch on two devices simultaneously within the same household without taking up an additional subscription. Although DStv said the policy change aimed to crack down on pirate streams, it was likely also intended to stop password sharing between different households. MyBroadband looked at how the 90-day active DStv Premium subscriber numbers changed before and after the streaming limit was imposed. And what we have been able to do is they've actually accelerated their subscriber decline by creating that password sharing crackdown. Because what happened was DStv did it in such a way that if you were from the same household, there was a sub-account plan, but DStv just outright didn't let you stream from two devices, which can be incredibly frustrating for because you're paying more than Netflix. You're in the same household and it's just bugging out and it won't let you watch the cricket or the rugby can you imagine Saturday night you can't watch your rugby because your child in Cape Town, Stellenbosch, is watching something on the street.
That's gonna make you mad,
infuriating. You're not gonna be happy. Cancellations are coming, you know.
Yes. Heads will roll.
So moral of the story, don't do that unless you're like Netflix could afford to lose some subscribers. DStv could not.
Definitely not, hey?
And they faced the woes on that.
So many losses. You can only take so much.
But you know who hasn't taken a loss? Game and Macro are apparently killing it with their on-demand deliveries. Now, this is interesting because Takealot's got a huge market share. Amazon just came in with a similar model. And we have Woolworths Connect, which is essentially another tech industry also launching now. And then you've got Macro. So apparently Massmark is making a big e-commerce push and it has offered an on-demand delivery service through the One Cart platform. So what is an on-demand delivery service? It's like Checkers 60 and 60, but for your tech. So if you bought a TV on demand, 60 minutes at your house, that's basically what they're selling. Go online, buy a product, get it in 60 minutes. I mean, I personally would probably fall prey to that marketing pitch. The company says the platform has seen impressive growth in 2024, recording a sales increase of more than 200% during the first half of the year. The platform offers approximately 75,000 products from Macro, Game, and Builders available for delivery within 60 minutes. It recently announced plans to convert some of its game stores in malls to small format Macro stores to expand its distribution footprint. So if we ever see Game and NASA turn into a Macro, just know that they're doing it so that they have a hub in which they can better facilitate deliveries around South Africa, but more importantly, specifically to sustain that service in which they can deliver a product in 60 minutes, which is really cool because Takealot lets you have same day delivery, but you must order before 11 a.m. So if you get your order in at 5 minutes past 11 a.m., you're getting it the next day. This is like you order at 4 p.m. and you get it at 4:45, 5:15, your product arrives. That can be a big make or break for me on a Friday afternoon. Need something from Takealot. End of the day, what am I going to do? Buy from Game. You know, get it to your house in 60 minutes. Obviously, it's not available here now, isn't it? But we've seen that with things like the Takealot delivery network, they were able to create the Mr. Delivery, Mr. D delivery service here in Nasna, where you can actually now order from a bunch of restaurants. How crazy is that? In Nasna, you can order from, you know, you can order from Spur, you can order from, I think it's Taishan, you can order from Crispy Chicken, you can order from all these different places directly with Mr. D or Takealot's delivery network straight here in Nasna. And the Takealot drivers themselves have that secondary job where they can go and actually deliver food. And they go and pick it up from the restaurant and they deliver it there, and it's all the payments are handled online. Very, very cool to see things like that. Very, very cool.
Yeah,
is it time for a music break?
Yes, let's go for some music. Welcome back to Tech Plus on this Saturday with myself, Jan, and also Kane, discussing the week's biggest tech stories. Kane, what have you got for us next?
In an interesting turn of events, we spoke about Eskom and the fact that it's almost strange that we have power all the time. Apparently, Eskom has announced the arrest of three contractor employees, an excavator operator and two mechanics, for the theft of R1,000 worth of diesel at Kusile Power Station. The arrest took place on Tuesday, 23 July 2024, and apparently when the suspects were caught stealing this R1,000 worth of diesel, they offered a bribe of R5,000 to the supervisor, who declined the bribe. Ended up getting arrested, but they are currently free because their bail was R500.
Each, I hope.
I hope each, or can you imagine? That would be terrible. Please. Apparently, they dressed up as like maintenance guys and had a whole system in place. So it must have been a frequent dealing that they do, go shave off a couple. Because, I mean, if you're stealing R1,000 worth of diesel, what the hell are you doing bribing R5,000 for?
Yeah. This is why Eskom was in such a bad shape, you know. I mean, it's only recovering now, but this is why, because people kept stealing from it. It was like a car that belonged to everyone, and they would just come and steal the wheels, you know. You take one wheel, tomorrow we take the other wheel, before it just completely falls apart, eh?
Well, you know, the theft of the 21st century is not actually physical, it's digital. Did you hear about the stuff that happened with Adobe?
No.
So a few weeks ago, Adobe made a change to its policies.
Ooh.
And you know, sometimes when you go onto Facebook, you might get a pop-up like, hey, before you can continue, please accept our new terms of service. And you might get those kind of requests. Well, users that logged into any of the Adobe products, whether it's Photoshop, Illustrator, or just their Adobe Cloud, the minute they logged in, they said, hey, we've got some new terms of service. Would you please accept it before you can continue? Insofar as you weren't actually able to, A, get into your Adobe, manage any of your creative assets, or even cancel your subscription until you accepted the terms of service.
Whoopsie.
And now in these terms of service, it's stated that anybody at Adobe has essentially permission to automatically or manually view any of the work that you've created that is inside of your Creative Cloud, and not only view it and potentially do an analysis on it, but also A, train AI models on it, and B, even license that contact to other third-party service providers, so they can basically have someone pay them, let's say thousands and thousands of dollars, to train an AI model on your own creative content, which is in your cloud. So imagine, you know, that's kind of like saying every photo I've taken on my iPhone that's in the cloud can be looked at by anybody at Adobe, can be pulled up automatically or manually, and if they want, they can sell one of those photos to someone else without me even knowing about it, and it's just some random third party that's been able to either train an AI model of my work or whatever. And with that came a huge, when I say huge, amount of creator backlash. I'm talking massive, because you must understand that some creators are under NDA. So by creating a policy like that in your terms of service, you're actually bypassing their NDAs. You're without them able to control it, they have a risk of breaching their own NDAs. So a massive amount of kind of uproar came from the community.
You can imagine, you're
very, very upset. People like, I'm canceling Adobe now. You know,
they were serious
about it. So with that happening, we can only hope that that sends a strong message to some of these guys that, you know, things like that isn't gonna fly. We just saw now that the video game union, believe it or not, there is a union of employees that help produce video games, that are the voice actors, and they do all of that kind of stuff. Apparently, will go on strike, and they already are on strike as of 12 a.m. on Friday. USA time, so around 6 a.m. on Friday.
What do they want, Kane?
After failing to come to an agreement over the use of artificial intelligence in the industry. So basically, it's been going on for about 18 months, this argument between the video game creators union and the video game franchises. And basically what they're saying is they don't want to allow AI to basically train off of their own work, off of their intellectual property. And if it does train off of their intellectual property, they want to be financially reimbursed accordingly. And you know what the really messed up thing about it is? Because whether you look at it, whether it's from Adobe or whether it's from the movie industry or whether it's from the gaming industry, what you're doing is you're using the people that do the work to train the AI to do the work without them.
Mm.
So you're making the people that do the work responsible for their own competitor machine learning tool coming to the market.
Yo, that's not
And good. In Adobe's way, they made you unable to say anything else but I accept. Take my work. Train your stuff off of it.
That's just so wrong.
And that's like the, and I was watching a few people share some feedback, and one of the guys actually said something very interesting, which is we're at a very important point of human evolution, which is how much are machines going to, one, be able to do, because they're able to do many things that we're able to do now, but two, be legally allowed to do, and three, be trained on things humans do, which ultimately will lead to the replacement of those human beings. That is very uncharted territory. And we're seeing it here with the Video Game Union. We're seeing it with Adobe. These companies are making policies and choosing directions. And the ones that make the right choices and that care about the right people aren't getting the backlash. But the people that aren't caring about people are making all the money, because AI is what's kicking off right now. So it's really a war between machine and
man and creator. It's true what you're saying, eh? You actually training some... It's like training somebody else to take your job eventually.
Yeah, it's like being paid to train someone else who's just going to replace you.
And you know, and you just know for sure that it's going to take your job. That's terrible, man.
Like, for sure. It's horrible. You know, for sure. That's the thing. If you are going to do it, because it's kind of going to happen without a doubt. AI is off the ground. It's going to happen. But you have to be able to incentivize these people. If I was part of the era that trained AI to make images, then I should be part of that same era making money, because people were able to make images off of my work. You know? So as a creator, this should be a great financial opportunity for me, because how involved can I be in training AI models? And how much money can I make on royalties from all my hard work?
Yeah.
That's not the case right now. Now it's a case of how do I protect myself? How do I get back what's been taken from me? And we need to change that narrative a bit, and I think we'll see a big difference. Have you been having fiber problems? Apparently a lot of South African households are experiencing problems with fiber.
The internet hasn't been great recently.
As of Thursday, 25 July, apparently lots of South Africans are complaining about degrading connections.
What's happening?
And apparently OpenServe's network has emerged, you know, saying that they're having some connectivity issues. Octotel is reporting an outage. Vumatel is reporting an outage. Dark Fiber Africa is reporting problems. And they're unsure what could currently be doing it. But apparently, technicians are currently investigating 15 cables damaged by third-party contractors. Edenville has 14 cables damaged by fault fire.
Oh, no.
This is something that I never really realized. And it's another topic that we were going to talk about, which is actually cable theft. There's a lot of cable theft going on. And remember when we had a lot of copper cables? You would get your internet with a copper cable. Now, when copper cables were there,
ADSL,
ISPs had lots of problems, because guys would just come in and pull hundreds of meters of copper cable and just run away, leaving neighborhoods like disconnected.
I remember those stories. That was really bad in Gauteng.
So if one of the value propositions of fiber wasn't just, your speeds are faster, your quality of your connection is better, and your overall speed of your connection is faster, if that wasn't enough, also fiber doesn't have copper in it, so it is not necessarily incentive. There's no incentive for a criminal to steal it, but that doesn't mean the criminals are educated enough to know not to steal it. So they still have problems where people are going and stealing meters and meters of fiber cable,
and then they can't do anything,
but they can't sell it for anything because it's just glass. It's just,
I remember, I think there's actually an ISP, a local one, that put little stickers on the drain lids in town, saying that there's no copper or anything, you can't sell the fiber to make money, something along those lines.
One of the ISPs, I think it was Vumatel, apparently a year ago started a whole education campaign to teach people that fiber isn't copper, and apparently it's done nothing. They're still stealing it.
You see, the people you're trying to read, or you're trying to reach, they're not
there
listening.
To learn.
Yeah.
They're there to get money. You know?
So, I mean, imagine, so you're leaving a whole neighborhood or suburb without internet, and now you're sitting with fiber that you can't even sell. You know, so like, what's the point? Why did you do it?
Apparently, they just sell it for a few rands and, you know, do whatever they must with it.
But, oh man,
it's crazy, eh?
Yeah, that's not good.
Speaking of something that's crazy that I didn't expect to happen, at least this soon, and especially in this way, apparently Shein is opening its first store in South Africa.
Oh, I heard so.
Yeah. So Shein plans to open a local pop-up store in South Africa's busiest mall, the Mall of Africa in Midrand, Gauteng. However, the Chinese clothing retail giant won't sell any products at this location.
Oh, well, that's... What's the bloody purpose?
Instead, it will serve as an exhibition space to show off its latest fashion and life. This is truly Chinese stuff. I mean, like, you have a shop that doesn't shop. It's just a shop that's decorated.
Just look at pictures. I mean, you can do the same thing on your computer.
It's like a museum of e-commerce.
Yeah, but you can do the same thing on your computer. See the catalogs on your computer.
You know what's going to happen? You're going to be able to go there, scan a piece of clothing, immediately order it, and it arrives at your house in 2 days. It's just crazy to me that malls are going to become places where you look for things to buy online. It's just so crazy to think like
that. Yeah, the malls that are still open. You seen how many malls are empty all over South Africa?
Man, it's crazy.
It's like a ghost town. It's very, very sad.
When I went to Dubai and I went to the Mall of Dubai, I think there's like, in any given moment, I think there's like 1 million people in the Dubai Mall. It is just absolutely packed, man. It is huge. It's like 10 Garden Route malls on top of each other.
Oh my
word,
no.
And next to each other. It's absolutely huge. And then you go to another mall that's like 12 kilometers away, and it's a massive mall. It's like 5 Garden Route malls completely empty because everyone's at the Mall of Africa.
You see,
but the craziest thing about Dubai is that, you know, you go into these malls and it's like they're waiting for this mega, mega amount of people to arrive, but they never do. It's like they're always ready.
Always ready.
Starbucks guys are ready, clothing guys are ready.
Wow.
And everybody's at the ready.
I actually like that. That's dead. Actually quite nice.
It's completely dead. Like, there's no point.
They're hopeful.
And it's warehouse space. It's the same thing as what they were saying here with the macro stores. If you can have enough stores everywhere, they don't necessarily have to get foot traffic. It can serve as your location network, your network of retail that you can use to get, you know, products to customers. And that's just very, very interesting. Next up, we take a look at something else as well. Apparently, there's some big take-a-lot sales coming before the 28th of July. So if you're looking for buying anything, apparently the best take-a-lot ultimate checkout tech deals have arrived on our table, and there's a couple of really well-priced products. Apparently some of the best products are the JBL Tune True Wireless In-Ear Bluetooth headphones. It kind of looks like the Apple AirPods, but obviously for JBL, coming in at 1,600 Rand. We have the PlayStation Pulse Elite Wireless Headset. That's the actual headset that goes over your ears. That's 3,000 Rand. You have the PlayStation Plus Explore Wireless Earbuds. That's down 1,500 Rand to 3,500 Rand. You also get the TP-Link Deco X20 AX1800 Dual Band Wi-Fi Home Mesh Wi-Fi System. Sounds like a mouthful, but it's actually some really cool tech. Currently at a pretty reasonable discount, if I don't say so myself. Discounted to 4,000 Rand from 10,000 Rand. I don't know how true that is. It seems a little bit too discounted, to be totally honest with you, but it is a good Wi-Fi mesh system for anyone who wants to, you know, get a 5G Wi-Fi signal around your house for any 5G tech, such as a Oculus Quest 3 headset. The Naomi Redmi Note 13, 6GB RAM, 128GB storage LTE for 4,000 Rand. There's also an LG 65-inch Nano UHD Smart TV for 11,000 Rand, and a very nice Acer Nitro V15 gaming laptop, i5, 8GB RAM, 512GB SSD with the 2050 graphics card, going for 11,500. Very hard to find a laptop with that kind of kit for such a price without going secondhand or certified secondhand. There's a TCL 85-inch UHD QLED Google Smart TV going for 20,100 Rand, discounted about 6,000 Rand, which is pretty impressive. And then we have the graphics card RTX 4070 Ti Super 16GB going for 22,000 Rand, discounted 4,000 Rand. I still can't believe we've got to a stage where graphics cards are, you know, upwards of 20,000 Rand. More than a phone, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
More than a phone.
That you can buy like 4 phones, budget phones of that.
And
or more.
Next up, we're taking a look at iPhones in China. iPhones in China used to be very, very popular, but somehow have seen their popularity diminishing somewhat. According to IDC research, the rise of domestic smartphone brands has knocked Apple out of the top 5 spot. Apple, which now sits in 6th place, saw a 3.1% year-on-year decline, even as the Chinese market grew by 8.9%. At least it's doing better than Samsung, which doesn't even get a mention, despite dominating sales in the region a decade ago. The top phones in China are as follows. At number 5 is Naomi, with a 14% market share. We have Honor, with a 14.5% market share. Oppo, with a 15.7% market share, Huawei with an 18.1% market share, and personally, something I haven't heard of before, Vivo, with the highest market share in China of 18.5%. Very, very impressive. Huawei has grown 50% in China year-on-year growth, which is pretty impressive. And second to that, Xiaomi has also seen a 16.5% growth, along with Vivo at number one with a 17.1% growth in China. It's always interesting seeing what are the most popular phones in China, because they are the hub of manufacturing. So usually the best tech goes into the cheapest phones in China, and that can kind of show you the best value for money across the board. Also, people only stick with a phone and use a phone when it's easy to repair and all that kind of stuff as well. So Xiaomi and Vivo and
Is
Honor.
It Xiaomi or Xiaomi?
Xiaomi. I call it Xiaomi. I don't know why. I think I heard it somewhere.
Do you know Xiaomi?
I don't know. I just always called it that. It's like Huawei. I'm pretty sure I say it wrong.
Yeah, I'm Huawei.
It's Huawei or something.
No,
I think
I'll
it's
teach
Huawei.
You. Huawei.
Huawei.
Huawei and Xiaomi.
Why are you so confident in that pronunciation? What happened in your life?
I had to practice it. Because otherwise I'm going to sound like a cuckoo. Yeah, so I have to. I always check pronunciations. Well, I try to. So Xiaomi. Can you say Xiaomi?
Xiaomi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very, very interesting.
And Huawei.
Do you know the total population of the US? I think it's 300 million. 300 Oof, something million.
That place is huge.
Apparently, WhatsApp now has 100 million monthly users in the US. So basically, it's actually pretty crazy that one in every three people in the US have WhatsApp. You would think it'd be more.
Yeah.
You think it'd be hard to find anyone without WhatsApp.
What are the other people using? Or don't they have first?
Yeah, the SMS. Good old SMS. Word. When was the last time you sent an MMS, man?
MMS?
An MMS, bro.
With a photo? No. Like probably 20 years ago.
Long time. I can't remember when the last time I think the last MMS I got was like a Vodacom ad or something like that.
Yeah. Now, who still sends MMS? The occasional SMS to grandpa, I can understand. MMS, no.
Ancient.
Yo.
Ancient. In other news, Meta may be facing its first EU antitrust fine, and it is by no means a little bit of money in this particular fine. Reuters reports that Meta could be slapped with fines as high as $13.4 billion for tying classified advertisement services in its marketplace as within its Facebook social network. The ruling, which is expected in the coming weeks, would come over 18 months since the European Commission accused Meta of abusive practices that enabled it to distort competition in the online classifieds ad market, basically giving itself a competitive edge in its own marketplace for its own products. So we're going to see that. I mean, $13.4 billion is no joke. That'll set you back a couple days or a couple years worth of your business development. Not only that, though, it's not over for Meta. As I said, Meta had a success in the US, hitting 100 million users. Not so good in the EU, facing potentially a $13.4 billion fine. But not as bad as Elon Musk, who's publicly said that he has no problem. He will fight Mark Zuckerberg any place, any time, any rules. This is the latest comment from Mark Zuckerberg publicly. And this is after Musk famously challenged the Meta CEO to a cage match last year that Zuckerberg agreed to but never happened. Now, more than a year later, a reporter from Fox News got Musk to say today that he's again open to fighting, this time on any Zuckerberg's terms. And Zuckerberg even responded saying, "Are we really back to this again?"
Oh, man.
Which I thought was quite funny. You know, I'll fight Zuck anywhere, anytime. That's just crazy. On that note, is it time for a music break?
Yes, that's right. Let's go for some music. Welcome back to Tech Plus for this Saturday with yours truly, Ian, and also Kane, discussing all the biggest in tech. Right now, the Olympics.
Oh, no.
Obviously, so that opened last night. What a huge opening ceremony. I see they're having a lot of problems with drones.
It's actually not a problem with the drone. Team Canada, two of the coaches and some unknown analyst apparently sent a drone into the air to spy on the female league soccer team New Zealand. So it was basically Canada's female team spying on New Zealand's team
by a
drone, and then they got caught and they sent those two coaches from Canada home. Canada even said, "Good, send them home. So I don't know what's waiting for them back home, but it ain't nothing good. Imagine that flight. Can you imagine that flight? Head in hands.
But and the whole country knows about it. But yeah, there was also a story this week of the Olympic organizers saying they're actually shooting down drones because people are flying them over the areas, mainly tourists. You know,
shooting them down.
They're shooting them down. With guns. I don't know what they're using. They're shooting them down.
Definitely not Nerf bullets.
Taking them and then also tracing the flyer, the pilot, what do you call it? The operator. And arresting them as well.
So if you go to any of the Olympics games and some guy just comes running at you and just chucks a drone controller at you.
No.
Drop and run. Yeah. Don't try. That man's been caught. You're in trouble.
Yes, so yeah. So that I never thought, you know, they said they take down about, I suppose it's not that many, but they take down about 6 drones a day.
Wow, that's a lot. I mean, that's like $2,000 a drone. That's 40,000.
That's quite a lot, But they say it's not terrorists. You know, it's just like tourists who are curious.
I'd be so upset if you shot my drone.
And they arrest you. So there you go. And jail as well.
I hope my drone falls on you while you're coming to arrest me. That's my drone over there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Remember the CrowdStrike update that single-handedly brought Windows PCs to its knees?
How can we forget, Kane? That was just a week ago, eh?
You know, I even had things on Dropbox that weren't working anymore. Like
really?
Dropbox. I mean, I didn't even know Dropbox would be affected by something like that. But there were all sorts of big tech things just crashing.
But big radio stations also, hey? Especially in Australia. They just, like they were still broadcasting. And then boom, just everything's blue in front of you. You have no music to play. They didn't even have CD players. So, did I tell you? So this one, this one presenter, she had no choice but to take her own laptop, hook it up, and play music off Spotify.
Oh my
word.
Just
so they're not all fair.
Well, good on her for making a plan.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
But I just really hope she had like the paid version of Spotify. Otherwise, imagine those ads.
Doritos Crunch.
Going out on air, you know.
No.
So that was quite clever. So they just, you know, they went with it. But, I mean, most radio stations have like a form of, you know, another computer as backup or CD players even if you're going really old school.
Damn. So the CrowdStrike CEO actually came out and he's like, I'm very sorry, you know, we messed up, wasn't a good thing, you know. And apparently even the company went so far as to send a $10 Uber Eats gift card to teammates and partners who helped fix the outage. I'm telling you what, if a big outage comes because my colleague decided to send an update out that crashed 8 million computers, you best believe you're going to send me more than a $10 Uber Eats card to fix this problem.
But I heard then the people couldn't even use the vouchers because Uber flagged it as
suspicious.
Suspicious. Yo, this guy. This guy.
Systems had blue screen.
This guy, yeah. This guy is in so much trouble. I know that the US Congress, they want to see him as well. You know those people who grilled the TikTok guy?
Oh, yes.
They want to see Mr. CrowdStrike as well very soon. I think we'll see him there next week.
Well, if they grill,
can you imagine what they're gonna do to this guy?
Well, if he's grilled in any capacity as the secret, the head of the Secret Service was after the attempt of Trump's assassination, you're in trouble. Opt out of that meeting. Do that whatever you can do.
That woman stood no chance, eh?
Just like people just took turns.
Yeah.
Beating her with their words.
Yeah,
just
and this,
absolutely.
And this one woman actually used profanity. I was like, what did you just say?
You know, one of the people actually came up and they were like, would you like to take my 5 minutes of talking time to write your letter of resignation? And she waited for the response. Like, can you imagine? She said yes. Like, actually, you know what? That was
hectic. I saw that,
Not a beating you want to be in or around or spectating or answering or judging. I mean, that's just pure heat in the room.
Yes, I know. That was bad.
That was absolutely wild. Speaking of things that are wild, apparently OpenAI has announced its Search GPT, an AI-powered search engine that it's going to be releasing that could be a potential Google competitor.
Whoa.
Keep your eyes open for that. Google has lost a little bit of its market share with all the AI competition coming out and search engine, you know, stuff. But I have yet to find a more reliable search engine than Google, even to this day. You know, I've tried a few other search engines. I can't say that I'm particularly impressed by them. Bing search has improved drastically since Bing search of like 2016 and 17. Did you ever use Bing search?
Oof.
The only time I know of someone using Bing search is when they went browsing around and somehow picked up like a virus that put Bing search as their default search.
Oh, my word, yes.
Do you remember that?
That happened to me once. I downloaded software and then it installed Bing all over. Like everything was, the default was Bing. And it, guess what? It wouldn't set back. It wouldn't go back to Google. I was stuck with Bing. That's where, I hate Bing.
That is bad, eh?
I hate Bing just for that experience.
That is absolutely terrible. So apparently the new... the new Asus ROG Ally X just came out and apparently has been voted the number one handheld gaming console to date so far, apparently beating Steam Deck and Legion, the Legion Go and all those, the Lenovo Legion Go, in benchmarking. So if you are a handheld console fan, obviously take a look at the Asus ROG Ally X. That could be a really, really cool device. If you haven't purchased a handheld console yet and you're on the fence, probably a good idea to buy that versus one of the other ones, because they're going to be very similarly priced. And then the Samsung Galaxy Ring. Ian, are you going to be buying this Galaxy Ring by any chance?
Not in the foreseeable future, Caden. And you?
Really, eh?
And you?
So, I mean, apparently Samsung's Galaxy Ring is not, technically speaking, revolutionary. Smart rings of all sorts actually have been offering discreet health tracking since 2015. I didn't know that.
Gee.
If you had told me there's a ring that I can wear that'll tell me my heart rate in 2015, it'll probably go up.
I just knew about the watches.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't even know a ring.
No, not a ring.
I've never even heard of a ring charger. I don't even know what it looks like. My brain cannot comprehend how you would go about charging a ring. Is it got USB-C? Is it magnetic? Is it wireless?
Yeah.
Do you have to rub it? Does it charge automatically? Is it like a clock? Is there a quartz crystal? I don't know. So apparently, I mean, these rings track a lot now, and it's not so much a standalone health tracker or a smartwatch alternative as an accessory for your Galaxy Watch. So I find it quite funny because it's like accessoryception. You've got the watch, which is an accessory for the phone. So you've got your Galaxy Watch, which is your accessory for your Galaxy phone. And then you have your Galaxy Ring, which is an accessory for your Galaxy Watch. So your Galaxy Ring will tell your Galaxy Watch certain things, and your Galaxy Watch will communicate those things to your Galaxy device. And together they will tell you that either you're healthy or you need a run. And it's just very interesting that we've come to the point where, you know, we can track health and stuff with rings. And it makes me really excited because in the future, I hope we one day get to a point where just wearing a simple ring or a bracelet or a patch or even a Neuralink device will tell you, you know, what vitamins you're lacking, minerals, you know.
That would be nice.
When you're getting too much radiation on a particular day and you should put some sunblock on.
Or when you're about to die, that would be nice.
When your air quality's bad, date and time of death preferably would be quite nice.
Well, how close you're getting, you know. You have 1 year remaining.
Suddenly 6 months and you pick up a donut. You're like, okay, I'm going to put that back down.
That would actually,
real-time life expectancy.
It sounds like a Black Mirror episode, actually.
I wouldn't like it. When I first got my smartwatch, I would like get obsessive about my heart rate.
And yeah.
When you see your heart rate up and you're watching your heart rate go up and you think it should go down, it actually ends up going higher because you're like stressing about it.
Yeah, so that's not nice. I know exactly what you mean. And then you try and see how high it goes, and thinking of how high it goes per minute, it actually, you know, almost feels dangerous sometimes.
Absolutely.
There's some people push it really high, eh? Very high.
Very.
Beats per minute.
Well, apparently you got to take 220 minus your age, and that should be your maximum heart rate threshold. So
that's a lot of beats per minute.
You know, if you're older than 221, then you got a problem. Other news and final news, NASA fired its space lasers to communicate with the ISS. So this is pretty cool. NASA is testing 4K video streaming uses lasers that it can provide live coverage of the Artemis moon landing. That is so cool because we do not have real-time relay of what's going on when we're looking at something like the moon. So NASA researchers have successfully tested laser communications in space by streaming 4K video footage originating from an airplane in the sky to the International Space Station and back. The feat demonstrates that the space agency could provide live coverage of a moon landing during the Artemis missions and bodes well for the development of optical communications that could connect humans to Mars and beyond. NASA normally uses radio waves to send data and talk between the surface to space, but says that the laser communication communications using infrared light can transmit data 10 to 100 times faster than radios. So if you take that into account and you consider that an average time to get a message from Earth to space via radio, or Earth to the moon via radio, I believe is about 10 minutes or so. So having a rate 10 to 100 times faster than that might mean you might be able to get a message from the surface to the moon at best in a second, at worst in a minute. That's a big difference between 10
Very
minutes.
Big.
Most certainly when you're piloting an object remotely with a 10-minute delay versus a one-second delay, it's a big difference. It's a massive difference.
Okay.
And it's very exciting. Yes.
You know those two astronauts they sent up?
Yeah, they're stuck there still.
They're still up there.
They're still there.
It's not funny, eh?
They had like a, what was it, like a 4-6 day mission or something?
It was supposed to be a roughly week-long mission, and now this week marked 50 days that they've been up there.
That is
And they're
insane.
A bit concerned because they say you can only stay in space in that circumstances for 90 days. So they've got 40 days remaining there, almost at the 50% mark.
I don't know. When I was looking at it, NASA's like kind of like it's an August problem.
Yeah, but why?
And I'm like, geez.
Aren't those people like those that man and woman, aren't they panicking?
You know what makes me panicked? I mean, when they've been interviewed, and you can actually go watch the interview, they were interviewed, and they say things like, you know, this is something that they've trained for, and worst case scenario, they'll get into the damaged shuttle and it'll turn back to Earth.
Oh.
I was under the understanding that they joined the International Space Station team, but it has now come to my understanding that they are, in fact, alone in space, two solo people in
space.
Oh,
no, I would just lose it completely.
I would be uncomfortable, to say the least. I would not be in a state of relaxation.
I mean, you're not in a different country. You're not on the ocean. You're not in the air like flying in a plane. You are freaking out of the Earth. You are in space. Can you even comprehend it?
And you're not just there. You're stuck there.
Oh, Kane, geez, I'm having palpitations thinking
of
it.
And you know, what's crazy to me is the people that actually built the spacecraft that took them to the space station was Boeing.
Yeah,
you've seen all the stuff with Boeing lately with their.
Oh, but
I
won't say anything bad about Boeing because the people, the whistleblowers who say bad stuff about Boeing, they disappear. You know,
so you're like, so or they remain present. if I disappeared, was Boeing? Just know.
Watch your back when you leave the studio today.
They've taken us off of their airplane feed now. You can't get new radio on an airplane anymore.
That's a good one.
And on that note, that's the end from our side.
On that note, it's time to say goodbye. And really, I hope those two astronauts can come back to Earth. Otherwise, I'm just going to sing that song, Dumb Ways to Die. So many dumb ways to
die. Bringing a whole new meaning to the term. Coming back to Earth.
Good one. You're very sharp. You're very sharp for somebody who's having a weekend. Kane, thank you so much. Have a very wonderful rest of your weekend, and then we'll see you again in a week's time, same time, same place.
And thank you to all of our listeners for listening in. See you next week.
Yes, all the best to our listeners. Also, have an awesome weekend, and please stay warm and enjoy the Olympics. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.